Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Good evening. Wednesday night, Rock Sport Radio. That means it's time for me, Lewis Stewart, with this week's edition of The Lineout, your guide to everything that is going on in Scottish rugby and Scotland, just about in common with the rest of the planet. What is going on in Scottish rugby revolves around the World Cup. Final warm-up match coming up on Friday, of course, when Georgia, on the back of that 44-10 defeat last weekend out in Tbilisi, come to Murrayfield for the send-off match, which will be played under lights against a team that took us all by surprise by getting itself announced this afternoon. Interesting selection from Gregor Townsend. He had hinted in the build-up to the game that he was thinking of playing some of the guys who missed out on World Cup selection, aren't in the 31-man party that will head to Japan. But in the event, the starting 15 are all from that 31, although Grant Stewart, the hooker, who is one of those who does make the squad coming onto the bench, alongside Magnus Bradbury, making his comeback from a rib injury that he picked up in training, which in the end cost him any chance of having an opportunity to fight his way onto the plane to Japan. Apart from that, you're looking at a team in which one of the interesting things is the way that Ryan Wilson has been called on to captain Scotland for the first time when he wins his 45th cap, with Tommy Seymour and Johnny Gray both named as his vice-captains. Means it's a much less experienced side than the one that won in Tbilisi at the weekend. And, of course, they will miss the absolute genius that Finn Russell produced out in Georgia, which helped them to win the game. Although the possession and territory stats were pretty much even Stevens, Scotland were much, much better at converting pressure and territory and opportunities into scores, coming away winning by 5-1. Now, originally my plan had been that I was going to talk about that for a lot longer, but so much has happened over the week that I don't think I'm going to get a lot of time to do it as things begin to heat up. And of course, the big news this week, undoubtedly, that is going to dominate everything, was the announcement yesterday of those 31 players who will travel to Japan. One or two talking points in there, but on the whole, one of the surprises for me in the squad that Gregor Townsend is going to be taking to Japan is that it's not really a Gregor Townsend squad. You take Gregor Townsend, you tend to think of him as being this gambler, the guys who plays the Toonie Tombola, picking names out of a hat and sort of really rolling the dice every time he makes a selection. This time, he seems to have gone for conservative choices, not least the one that I got wrong in the build-up. I thought he would pick Rory Hutchison as a young, exciting, talented, loads of flair player who might make a difference, but he's actually gone for the much more conventional skills of Chris Harris instead, which I must admit, that one was one of the ones that took me by surprise. The other one that I didn't see coming was that I had assumed that after Sam Skinner went down in the France game and was ruled out of the World Cup, that he would trim his sails and take one of the back row to cover that lock position, in the same way that he was going to use Skinner as a lock to cover the back row position. But in the end, he has gone with an absolute specialist in Scott Cummings, although, as you will hear later, Scott has played a tiny amount, I think it's fair to describe it, in the back row. And he did actually get a few minutes in the back row out in Tbilisi at the weekend, when sort of various little niggles and bumps and the sort of things you pick up in a rugby match against a big, fierce team like Georgia were putting out, meant that they had to bring him on as cover for Matt Ferguson, with John Barkley already having gone off with a cut on just above the eyebrow, which is not a major issue for either of them. Anyway, the big announcement was undoubtedly yesterday when Gregor Townsend announced his squad. And I think the first part, we will listen to what Gregor Townsend had to say about that selection, starting off with when and how he told the players.
Earlier than we anticipated. So Sunday lunchtime was when we'd settled on the squad, and the phone calls began in the afternoon. So initially we'd spoken to our players about leaving the decision till Monday, and that was really to see if anybody had needed scans or we needed more information on their injuries from the weekend. But thankfully we got through the Saturday night's game okay, so we're able to make the decision earlier.
Gregor Townsend on letting the players know who was in the squad and who was out. But how tough was the selection itself?
It's tougher when you have more players to choose from. I think centres in the back row, I think three back rows missed out, and two centres. We obviously had released two centres earlier in the tournament. So those are the ones that are harder, because more than one player misses out. And in terms of the selections, we look at the performance of what they've done when they've had the chance to play for Scotland in recent games, how they've trained, the other makeup of that group, whether it's centre or back row, and we have the best picture of what we think they'll be able to do when we play Ireland, when we play Japan and the other teams. And when we finished finalising the squad, we're really happy with the group of players we have.
Cricket Townsend on the difficulty of making those selection calls, but I think it's also worth hearing from him on one of the big calls he did make, not selecting Rory Hutchison, who had scored two tries at the weekend but couldn't make the final cut.
He came very close, yeah. Both him and Hugh were debated for a long while on the flight back and at the airport, and then subsequent conversations with the coaches. Rory did very well on Saturday night, looked comfortable on the ball, and he's probably just missed out because he's not had enough international experience, especially against some top teams. So he came off the bench in both the France games and started against Georgia, whereas we know there's players in that group that have performed really well and are performing really well in training, but have performed really well in the past for Scotland in those bigger games. Both you and Rory, I suppose, to a certain extent, it's similar. For Rory, he's not had enough games, really, at international level to force his way into the squad. For Hugh, he's probably not had enough games playing well, playing at all, or playing well over the last few months. He's looked in really good shape in training, but we didn't see enough in his, game and a half that he had with us to get him into that final squad. But we know he's on the way back to his best form. We've seen it in training. But unfortunately, it just wasn't enough for this squad.
Well, you said to go with different things between the back row and the second row to put a different option so you can pick the likes of Matt Ferguson or Matt Ferguson.
Yes.
And why didn't you?
Yeah, that was debated probably the longest out of all our selections when Sam Skinner got injured. We knew that he was a player that could cover back row and second row. Then with him being out, it was either four second rows, and out of that four that we've selected, Scott Cumming's probably the only one that could move into the back row and has done it earlier in his career. But that would mean that it would be either four second rows and five back rows, or three second rows, and could there be someone from our back row cover second row? And partly in terms of getting our preparation right for games, to have four second rows really helps you prepare the team, whether you're doing live maul defence, live maul line out preparation. Partly the form of those second rows as well. Scott Cummins has been excellent. Ben Toulis really stepped up at the weekend, and Grant and Johnny are really experienced players for us. That became the final factor in saying, right, we're going with five back rows.
Gregor Townsend admitting that the back row was the toughest of a tough selection decision. Finally, from Gregor, a quick look at how far he thinks Scotland can go in the World Cup.
Well, we really like our squad. It's a combination of experienced players. We saw that in our game against Georgia and the training week. There was a lot of leaders there, players that have captained Scotland in successful games, players that lead certain areas of our game. Whether that's VP Nell as an experienced prop, whether that's Grant Gilchrist, Johnny Gray as line-out leaders, and Defend Russell, Stuart Hogg with their attack. Then when we look at the two vice-captains that Stuart had beside him and John Barkley and Greg Laidlaw, that's really encouraging for us as coaches to know that we have leaders right throughout our group. We have looked at players that will work hard, that will take the game to the opposition, that won't be fazed by any challenge you have out there, and also players with strong defensive attributes. That was a key work on for us after the Six Nations, and we believe this squad has a much stronger defensive feel to it.
Gregor Townsend looking forward to the World Cup after naming his squad, in which Stuart McInally, I suppose to not many people's surprise, was named as captain, although it's a really, really strong leadership group. You have got alongside him Greg Laidlaw and John Barkley, as Townsend was talking about there, but you've also got the likes of Stuart Hogg and Grant Gilchrist, who have both captained Scotland in the past, and after Friday there'll also be Ryan Wilson, who's captaining the team on Friday for the first time, who will be out in Japan as well. But for Stuart McInally, this was something of a turnaround. Those with longer memories might recall that back in 2015 he was actually named in the squad as very, very much a rookie hooker. It was only a couple of years after he'd made the transition from the back row to the front row, and it was something of a surprise that he got the nod at hooker. But then 2 days later he was diagnosed with a problem in his neck and had to pull out. So second time named in the squad, first time that he will go, we hope. How does he feel about it, and how good did it feel?
Yeah, look, it's a really proud moment for me, and especially going back to what you touched on there, the 2015 World Cup, and how that was good for me in a lot of ways, that I got my first cap at hooker, and I sort of made the transition, you know, proved to myself that I could do it, and then when I got selected, and then obviously having to pull out, it was a real mix of emotions, and I look back at that 2015 World Cup, you know, with some pretty sore memories of having to watch the games from my sofa with a sore neck. So yeah, but this time around it's great, and to know that I've made the 31 and also been chosen as captain is a real sort of confidence booster for me, and yeah, no, I'm over the moon. I've actually not thought too much about it, to be honest. It does seem like a long time ago, and you know, people do keep bringing it up about the last World Cup and how that was obviously disappointing, but this time around it's, I feel like a different player, if I'm honest. I was very much just coming towards the end of what felt like my transition from back row to hooker then, and had two caps and I was feeling good, but you know, I was still really inexperienced at hooker, and I think if I'd gone to that World Cup I wouldn't have, you know, been as comfortable as I am now, sort of standing at the sideline throwing the ball in or in the front row scrummaging. The experience has just helped me loads on that front. So yeah, like this time around I'm more relaxed. I feel personally I'm in a good place to go there and play some good rugby. It's been tough. I remember when I found out I was missing the 2015 World Cup, I sort of said to myself, I'm going to use this and come back stronger. I was determined to come back with a stronger neck than I'd ever had before, and because I think I took that probably for granted, that how strong your neck needed to be to play in the front row of international rugby. So I did loads of stuff, still do loads of stuff in it to stay on top of it, and yeah, sort of, I remember, so obviously didn't end up going to the World Cup 2015, and I ended up playing all of this 2016 Six Nations, I think, because Fraser was injured, so it was myself and 40. And then I didn't play at all the year after, because I was struggling to even get in the Edinburgh team, and that was a really tough year for me. Sort of really feeling like I was ready to kick on, and I just couldn't get a game at Edinburgh because I wasn't quite there yet, and that was tough. And then obviously when Richard came into Edinburgh, and I think Ross had an injury, he just believed in me and gave me a good run of games. I think up until that point I hadn't played more than a game in a row without sort of having to go back to the bench, so he just gave me loads of game time, and it was then on that I managed to start playing for Scotland as well. So I really look at that as the sort of start of my Scotland career. You know, when that, I think it was Gregor's first year when we played the Autumn Test, it was New Zealand and you know, Australia, those games. I had a really, you know, positive start to my Scotland career in that regard. And yeah, Gregor told me last week, he just sat me down and asked me to captain the Georgia game last week, and also to captain, if I wanted to captain the World Cup squad. And obviously, I was desperate to do it, so I was also, you know, aware of how much leadership there was around me as well. And, you know, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And I sort of said to myself, well, if I get asked, then I'm happy to do it. And yeah, it does make me more relaxed about it as well, knowing that I've got Greg and John there. It was a really good chance of the weekend there to work with both of them on the pitch and be the captain. And they've been so good at helping me. Like they take such a workload off me, and John speaks so well about defence. Greg speaks so well, you know, about everything because of his experience. You know, between them, they've got 130-140 caps. I don't know how many, but it must be a lot. So I'd be silly not to tap into that experience. And yeah, it certainly makes me more relaxed in my role as captain when I've got them with me. I've had the experience of captained my country 4 or 5 times now, and I know exactly how I do it. You know, I'm not the kind of captain, I'm not going to speak loads. I've said this to Gregor, I was like, I'm not going to be the captain that's going to be the most vocal. Yeah, but what I will do is I'll work exceptionally hard, and I'll train hard, and I'll make sure that everyone works together to get the best out of us on the pitch. So for me, that looks like, you know, asking Greg to speak and do a lot of stuff. It's about asking John to help. And I'm certainly going to lean on the guys around me, because why wouldn't I? You know, they've got way more experience than me on the pitch, and I think they all have such valuable strengths that can help us on the pitch. It's certainly the most leaders I've been involved with in any squad, whether that's national or sort of with Edinburgh. And yeah, that can only be a good thing. You know, if you've got, you know, you need the team to function whether I'm playing or not. So you have to have leaders throughout the park, and yeah, I think it's a massive strength for us.
Stuart McInally, the Scotland captain for the World Cup, reflecting on how he has so many people who are helping him to do the job and will continue to help him to do the job for the next 5, 6 or maybe even more weeks. Finally, before we let him go, one final thing for Stuart to ponder. We've talked many, many times about the suggestion that Scotland are vulnerable to packs with big beastie boys. Georgia tried that tack. It didn't work for them. How confident is he that Scotland have got the weapons to match any team trying to outmuscle them rather than outmaneuver them? And who are the players who are going to do that job for Scotland? Stuart McInally, again.
Well, I think if you look in the front row, WP now is our beast up front. You know, he's an excellent scrummager. He's someone who's proved that in the Scotland jersey for a number of years now, and he's someone I've had the pleasure of playing with for a long time. I look at Gilko in the second row as well, who's just worked great, is exceptional, and you know, he's played 3 back-to-back 80s in the warm-up, and he's been, I think, one of our best players. The way he puts himself about and his intent at scrum and maul is excellent, along with the stuff around the park. And then I was really excited to see how Blade went in the France game at home as well. I thought he was excellent, so he went off. So, look, I think we've got a good number of players in the pack that can step up this World Cup.
Stuart McInally, Scotland captain, finishing off that little section looking at how he came to be captain and how he expects the captaincy to go with all the other potential leaders in the squad alongside him. Now, there were a few selections, and we'll go into them over the next couple of weeks in more detail, but one of the interesting ones is, for the first time since the game went professional, we have a player from one of the old traditional clubs sort of playing in a Scotland squad heading for the World Cup. The last time I can recall this was when Derek Lee, when he signed for Watsonians, played for Scotland against Argentina way back in 2000, and that's a long, long time ago. Gordon Reid signed for Ayr a little while ago, and here he is in the Scotland squad. So it is something that is going to be an interesting dynamic for him, and when I caught hold of him, started off by wondering how much he is looking forward simply to going to Japan, never mind playing there.
It's going to be a massive game. It's going to be a massive game for them too, because it's the end of the pool stage, and it's going to be a massive game for us. We see all our games, all our pool games, as massive games. They all bring different physicalities, different qualities to the game. So every game's a big game, and obviously that's going to be even bigger. Them and in their home country, their hometown, you know. It's just, it'll be massive for both teams.
Forgive me for not looking it up. Were you there 3 years ago?
Yes.
So how different and how difficult are the conditions, particularly for the big guys like you in the front row?
You know yourself, when you're walking out there, absolutely. And the humidity is absolutely phenomenal. Like that time we played in Texas a few years ago, my first cap, and it was just phenomenal over there. Well, obviously go over there early and climatise, but we've been doing a lot of stuff in the sauna, steam rooms, hot baths, to try and get our bodies used to it, to get our bodies used to that, the challenge it's going to be over there.
And my memory of those games out there, there was a huge amount of running involved. People were sort of going, you know, 9, 10, 11K during a game. That must be desperately difficult in that sort of weather.
Well, it's all about your prep before. You kind of just walk into a game and say, yeah, I'm going to play a game of rugby. You have to, it's the months, what we've done before, the hard training, the graft that we've put in over the pre-season for the World Cup. It's been phenomenal. Obviously, that cuts to the strength and conditioning coaches and Gregor putting a fabulous programme for us. Well, I would say fabulous, it was absolutely a brutal programme for us, but it's just to getting us up to that intensity that we can go out there and put a performance in, a high quality performance, time after time after time, because obviously it's short turnarounds from game to game, and we have to be at the top notch to be there, and it's all about recovery and rest and all that for that too. But just all the preparation we've put in to go over there is obviously, hopefully it'll pay off, and hopefully, yeah, it will be a shock to the system when we're playing their games, and the temperature's phenomenal, but it's something we need to get used to. We need to get used to fast.
And from your point of view, when you left London Irish and signed for Ayr, were you at all worried that that might be count against you?
Nah, I make a decision. I make it for my family. I make it for myself. It was what I was going to be best and happy at. It was just a decision I had to make. And, you know, Gregor knows me as a player. He's knew me for a long time. He knows what I can do. And he took me in, and fair dues, he gave me the chance, and I felt like I'd done that opportunity well when I played against France the both times, and hopefully I can go out. Each time I go out there, I just wanted to represent Scotland and give them all.
And you're coming straight off London Irish into camp, so it's not as though you'd be training at that level.
No, I've not trained at the Super 6 level of the Ayrshire Pools, but I'm still a professional player just now until obviously I get down to play for Ayr.
So presumably, though, the World Cup is likely to be the swan song to your international career. Have you thought about that at all?
Not at all. I'm still kind of we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what happens. I never say never. I'll just go out there and give 110%, and hopefully, we'll see what happens with everyone else.
So how much are you looking forward to it, and how great was it to get that phone call from Gregor?
As I said, the culture over there is phenomenal. Like, it's just such a cool place. You always want to go. It's somewhere I've always wanted to go since I've been a wee boy to experience. You always go to different places, such as America, but a place like Japan, with the culture they've got, is a place, I've always wanted to go to.
Gordon Reid, looking forward to his chance to go to Japan, which is going to be a huge experience for him. But don't forget, it's not just for him, because with the Super 6 kicking off in November, if you can imagine the impact that having a current international player will have on his current club, Ayr, then it is going to be absolutely huge. So I got hold of Billy McCarg, the club president, to ask him how he felt. And Billy, it's one of these things that Gordon is coming back to you on the back of a full professional career. And when it comes to marketing the club, then you don't just have a former international or an aspiring international, but it's a current international representing you out in Japan.
I think it's totally unexpected, but we didn't see that coming. All credit must go to, obviously, Gordon for working hard to get himself in that position. And the two games that he's played, I think he's played exceptionally well, and they scrummaged well. So that's his forte, and I think that's what he's going to Japan for.
But it must help you as a club, particularly with the Super Six coming up, that you have such a big personality, such a big figure, and somebody that you can take out into the community to be such a role model involved with you.
Oh, it's a massive bonus to hear to for Gordon to be at the club, to sign for Super Six team Ayrshire Bulls, and also what he brings to the community, working with the local schools and the community, I think is can only be good for rugby in Ayrshire, to be honest with you. Obviously, a lot of players will aspire to meet him and play alongside him, to be honest with you.
And what to say about, you know, a club like Ayr that Gordon was prepared to turn down fully professional contracts in order to come back and join the family back at Millbrae?
I think it says a lot for Ayr, to be honest with you. I think the big bonus for Ayr is that Gordon's been there probably 10 years ago when he came through the juniors. He didn't start to probably, I think he was 14 before he started coming to play rugby. And he's come through here, got to the first 15. He was in the winning team the first time that Ayr ever won the league in 08-09. He's done remarkably well in the pro level, playing at Glasgow, London Irish. But the key thing, I think, for Gordon is come back, he also he likes his roots. He's actually very popular locally. I can't say enough, to be honest, how hard he's worked and where he's got and what he's achieved in the last 10 years, to be honest with you.
So how did it come?
The bonus there, I think, is like, we've always built, it's probably never been the best team, but I think we've always had good team spirit, and I think that's the key to the club, to be honest with you. There's team spirit within the junior section, the senior section. We're not like possible other clubs where the senior section and the junior section got on very well, and they aspire that the whole club's successful on and off the pitch.
How did he come to rejoin you? Did you approach him? Did he approach you? Or was it just sort of automatically, you know, once he was coming back to Scotland, he was going to come home again?
I think he was actually hoping that either Edinburgh or Glasgow would have given him a contract. And when there was nothing offering, he actually approached ourselves to see if we would be interested in. And obviously, we've got a cap salary we could offer him. But on top of that, we've offered him a job within community rugby at Ayr Academy. So that position became free because Stephen Wallingwell had left the job to go to Italy. So we were actually fortunate at the time. He approached us at the right time. We had an opening and we could build both jobs for him to help him hopefully try and stay here.
And presumably when Scotland are playing out in Japan, are there plans to open up the clubhouse so that people can congregate to watch Gordon together in the club?
Well, there's plans, that's definitely. I think as he's a local lad and he's very popular, I think the club are definitely doing something revolving when Scotland are playing.
I would have thought the atmosphere will be fantastic. I mean, particularly, he has scored a couple of tries for Scotland. If he could get another one out of the World Cup, I can imagine you might have to replace the roof. It would be said flying so high.
Oh, well, I'd quite welcome that, to be honest with you. That's the point. At the end of the day, it's like, when we signed Gordon, we actually probably half-heartedly thought he'd an outside chance of getting to the World Cup. So the bonus ball for the club and Gordon is that he's achieved it, and I hope he does very well.
Indeed. And when you, just before I let you go, I mean, obviously Super Six coming up this season, which is part of the reason behind Gordon coming back, but how are preparations for that going within the club?
Preparations are going really well. I think we've actually signed 34 out of a 35 allocation. We've actually got quite a lot of new blood, ex-players coming back, like Lewis Anderson. We've got players coming from Australia, New Zealand and South Africa. Majority of them are Scottish qualified, and also players from from down England have come up as well. So Ayr squad will possibly have a new look about it, and that's all down to Pete Murchie doing his homework and the contacts he's got, that he's worked hard behind the scenes to hopefully take us to the next level.
Thank you very much, Billy McHarg, the AIR president, who was there talking and finishing about the Super Six developments that are going on with the club. But the big news, obviously, from their point of view, was Gordon Reid's selection for the World Cup squad. He heads out to Japan a week on Monday with all the other players. Time for an ad break, back with a bit more reflection on World Cup matters.
Have you ever lost money on an investment? If a high street bank persuaded you to buy a stocks and shares ISA, unit trust or investment bond and you lost money, Goodwin Barrett can help you get back thousands of pounds in compensation. Even if you don't have the investment anymore or the paperwork, Goodwin Barrett make it easy to find out. Text GOOD to 66777. That's GOOD to 66777. You don't need a claims management company to make a complaint, and if unsuccessful, you can refer it free to the Financial Ombudsman.
Do you hear that? That's your family coming round to your new house for Sunday lunch. Your son opening the door of his first home. Visitors arriving at your guest house. Friends coming over to watch the football. Scottish Building Society offer a range of mortgages, so we can turn this into this. Love! Scottish Building Society. We've been helping people open doors since 1848. Call us today on 0345 600 4085. Scottish Building Society is authorised by the Prudential Regulation Authority and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority and the Prudential Regulation Authority.
It's easy to put things off. I'll sort it tomorrow. It'll wait. Well, turns out if you're a man with prostate disease, the sooner you spot it, the better it can often be treated. So if your dad or brother have had prostate cancer, or you're having trouble with your waterworks, do something about it. See your GP or visit prostatescotland.org.uk for more information. Prostate Scotland. Pull your finger out.
Leave the winter outside with Plumbase's hottest offers in the Feel the Heat brochure. Get yours at your local Plumbase branch.
Plumbase is the place.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to the last part of the show. Before the break, I was talking about the World Cup. We were talking about Gordon Reid in particular. But if there was one player amongst all the 31 who must have had a really, really nervous time waiting to hear from Gregor Townsend, undoubtedly it has to be Scott Cummings. He wasn't even in the original 42-man party when it was announced way back in May. He was added to it after playing for Glasgow in the Guinness Pro 14 final at Celtic Park and made a late run into the Glasgow side, never mind the Scotland side. Back at Christmas, he wasn't even featuring in Glasgow's first choice side. So the season has been one of a miraculous turnaround for him. But nevertheless, when I caught hold of him, then it had to start off with that sleepless night waiting for Gregor Townsend to tell him his fate.
Yeah, definitely did actually. I actually got a message from Xander sort of half an hour before I actually got the phone call. He was saying, oh, you know, I've got a phone call and this person's got a call. So I was sitting there like, oh, that means I'm not getting picked. But yeah, it was a tense day, and obviously it was, well, when I finally got that call, you know, I was so excited and just sort of amazed that it was happening, and actually sort of realising going to Japan for six, seven, 8 weeks to represent the country. So it was amazing.
But when you think of where you were back at around about Christmas time,
yeah,
can you even believe yourself how far it has come and how well you've done?
Yes, it's been a whirlwind. You know, like you said, I wasn't sort of getting picked too much around sort of Christmas time. There's a couple of games I didn't play in, and I was just sort of trying to knuckle down as much as I could. You know, I was just, you can sort of take getting dropped two ways. You know, you can either sort of get really frustrated or you can just take it an opportunity to get better. So, you know, I just sort of tried to focus on my game as much as I could, and then when I finally got the shots, just tried to play as well as I could. And yeah, it's obviously getting into that final, you know, what an amazing occasion it was being at Celtic Park. And for that final, obviously it didn't quite work out the way we went, but then getting the call after that to come train with Scotland was amazing, and it's just been trying to work as hard as I can from then on.
You weren't in the original, whatever it was, 42-man party that he announced. How worried were you at that point in the proceedings that you hadn't done enough?
Well, he gave me a call at that. He gave me a call at the time, and he said that there was a space open. He was still going to add another second row / back row. So I knew that, not so much that I wasn't going to get in, but I knew that I still had a chance to get in. And obviously there was still a spot that he was keeping open. There was a lot of good second rows still playing around as well. So, you know, I was just sort of thinking, right, I've now got a couple of games to go and try and prove to Gregor that I should get picked. So just tried to play as well as I could, and that was sort of last semi-final and final for Glasgow.
Well, at that time, you must have also been aware of Richie Gray coming back to playing out in France and sort of kind of wondered whether that might have been the preferred option?
Yes and no. It's a weird one because obviously the squad was named, and then probably the same as the players at the time, you're not really thinking about it because, you know, we had a semi-final against Ulster, which was a massive game, and then final against Leinster. So for me, I was just sort of focusing on myself, you know, it's the same old, just focusing on myself and just making sure that, you know, I always want to say to try and sort of play myself into things instead of, you know, getting there on sort of other reasons. So for me, I was just trying to play as well as I could in those last couple of games to make sure that I was getting picked.
You must have been delighted with your first start for Scotland, though it went about as well as it could have done.
Yeah, the first start was amazing. Yeah, it really was. You know, obviously playing for Scotland the week before was great, but then running out of Murrayfield, something completely different. You know, it's something I've dreamed of for years, and it was absolutely amazing. And then obviously to get the win in that game was great. Obviously we didn't quite start the first couple of minutes the best, but I think we controlled the game a lot better in that game compared to the week before. We actually played our style of rugby, and I think especially after Georgia now, we're actually starting to get our attack and flair back a bit more. So,
I was talking to Ben earlier about as well that there's been this public perception about the Scotland pack that they're vulnerable to the Beastie Boys. How big a step forward was the weekend against Georgia?
Yeah, obviously they've got sort of one of the most physical packs anyway, you know, physical and sort of strong packs out there. So we, going into those games, sometimes you're even more fired up because you know that probably if the forward pack can beat the other forward pack, then the team's going to win. So, you know, we always say that we don't want to be that team that's known for having a soft pack or that can't travel. You know, we want to go out there and prove people wrong in those senses. So, yeah, against Georgia it was amazing. Obviously, the forward pack played really well and probably stopped them in the drive and the scrum very well. So we will be looking to do that again this weekend, yeah.
You kind of showed your versatility. There weren't many scrums, but you did end out in the back row.
Yeah. Gregor talked to me about it. So obviously, going out there, you know, they're wanting someone that can play sort of second row and back row as well. So he'd mentioned to me if I was sort of comfortable playing it, and I said I was. So yeah, I don't know whether I'll be played there or not. To be honest, I'm obviously a second row firstly, but you know, I'll play whatever I'm asked to play. So you know. Of interest.
I don't think you played professionally in the back row. Have you played much in the back row at all?
I've played actually one game, not starting. I actually came off the bench for Glasgow about 2 years ago at number 8. You can look it up.
I'll look it up.
That's what I told Gregor.
I'll tell you
anyway.
Which one it was.
That's what I told Gregor. I think it was against the Dragons. Yeah, I mean, it's not, like I said, I'm a second row and that's what I'm used to playing, but with the way the squad sort of works, obviously you can only take a certain number of each position in that, and if you ask me at any point to play anywhere in the back row, I'll happily do it. You know, I'll make sure I learn the role properly. And a lot of the game, obviously, there is different roles you have, but you know, once play sort of breaks up, you're still running the same sort of stuff. So, you know, if I'm asked to play there, I'll be happy as end to play, yeah.
Scott Cummings, looking forward to the opportunities possibly to play in the back row as well as his usual position in the second row. I did look that one up, as I promised, after interviewing him. And I think the game he was talking about was a pre-season friendly, which they played against the Dragons in Ebervale. And he finished up in the back row in that game, scoring, if my memory serves me correct, a fantastic 50-yard try. But it's not just, it's worth having a little think about the World Cup and what it represents, not just in terms of what it means for the country, but also what it means for the individual player. So I have on the line Chris Patterson, who is the Scottish record holder, having played in 4 World Cups. And even at the end of that, I suspect that Chris is probably one of those who was losing a wee bit of sleep the night before the squad was announced, although he was a recognised goal kicker, knew that your place was going to be in the squad. So Chris, from your own memories, can you say how nervous it is for the players as you wait the night before when you've got the coach call the next day?
I would say it depends on the individual. Some individuals will be more confident than others. Some will probably know. You know, the core of the guys that probably know, having had discussions with coaches, you know, for instance, who's going to be captain, or, you know, looking at some of the senior players involved in senior management groups, to be pretty sure you're involved. For me, I would never take it for granted. It was always, you know, kind of plan for worst case scenario type thing. So I think the only one I wasn't nervous for was, as I said yesterday, was the first one in 1999, because it wasn't really on my radar. I'd been in the squad in the summer tour, the uncapped summer tour, and then I'd kind of left the training squad and focused on starting my career with Edinburgh. And then after the two warm-up games, or two or three warm-up games, it was a call out of the blue from Arthur Hastie. I said to the morning yesterday, actually. I think it was Arthur Hastie, actually, on a Monday night. And I was actually at a game around. I was watching Gala play, I think, a Border League game at Netherdale on the Monday night. And I got this phone call and said, listen, you're going to be in the World Cup squad. So it was completely blue. So there wasn't really nerves for that one. For 2003, 2007, and 2011, there was nerves because you're working down, you're counting down and working towards this point of where the squad's announced. And no matter how confident you feel, or how well you've played, or how valuable you feel in terms of your position, there was always a kind of nervous what if, or what if I'm not in. And I said probably the one that was most nerve-wracking, I've said often, things get worse the older you get. There's more expected of you, there's less, I suppose, forgiveness if you make a mistake or make an error. So 2011, when I was kind of hoping to get to my fourth World Cup, I'd suffered a bad injury the year before. I'd only been back playing for a little period of time in terms of international games. There was an internal drive that I wanted to be the first player to get to four World Cups in Scotland. So it more to lose in some ways if I didn't get there. So it was pretty nerve-wracking in the build-up to that. But once it comes and you're in the squad, I can talk from experience here that it sounds terrible, but it's just another rung in the ladder. It's another fixed point you've made, and then as soon as you're in, you don't allow yourself to celebrate or pat on the back. It's right, I have to kick on now. This is almost a starting point. So what was the end point right until the moment that you knew you were in the squad? That moment now becomes a starting point for the next 6, 8, 12 weeks, whatever. So in some ways you're delighted, but the achievement's not, well, for me, the achievement was never getting in the squad. It was like, right, how can we push ourselves on to be successful next?
I suspect that 2011 is probably the World Cup you enjoyed least, but which one did you enjoy most?
2003 was my favourite. I thought I said this before, the way that it was hosted in Australia, and the way we played, actually. We went to South Africa for a two-test tour just the summer, well, I think the June before, and we kind of made an agreement that we were going to play an expansive game, a quick game, and we played two tests in South Africa and stayed true to a lot and played some good rugby there. And I just really enjoyed the way we were playing. I loved the company I was in. I was still part of a squad that included some good players who I looked up to. And I liked, as I said, I liked the way that the Australians did it. The World Cups in 1999 and 2007 were a little bit different because they were, you know, there was games playing at Murrayfield.
Mm-hmm.
So the 2003 one, as was 2011, were completely encompassed in one country, and you're away, you're miles away from home, you're in time zone. You've got this mentality that you're there to, you know, there's no home comfort and work, and you're in it together, you're in it as a team, and you're going to succeed. Whereas subconsciously in 2007 and 1999, with the games being at Murrayfield, yes, it was special, but it felt different to the two World Cups that I played in that were solely on foreign shores.
2003 was a number of breakthroughs from your point of view. It was obviously the first major competition where you'd sort of been the main goal kicker. Talk us through that kick against Fiji.
Well, I'd started kicking. I mean, I kicked all my career until, I'm not saying until I turned professional, but I didn't kick professionally immediately. The first kind of time I took it was the Ireland game in that 2003 Six Nations.
Mm-hmm.
As a regular spot, or the French game, or whichever game it was, as a regular spot. So I went to that World Cup as frontline goal kicker, and I had that a goal to not to miss a kick in the entire World Cup. That was my goal. And I remember playing against Japan. I think I missed my first two in the opening game against Japan in Townsville. So that goal went out the window. So you reset a goal. And I just, like always with goal kicking, it's a responsibility that you're given by a team and you have to do it as best you can. And as a period where I was able, Mick Byrne, I was working at that point, was obviously with us, and we did a lot of extra work. We did so many extra sessions at the end of sessions on our days off, and Mick, who knew Australia quite well and grew up there and had friends, he was able to get us, and it's a bit different now, but, you know, training pitches and a set of posts wherever we were that we could go and do extra sessions, and that really helped. And I just remember enjoying the kind of pressure associated with it.
Did you feel much pressure on that kick against Fiji, though? Because it wasn't a gimme by any means at all.
No, of course you feel pressure, but it's quite funny because I didn't kick well against Japan. I kicked okay against the USA, but I had one poor one. France, I think, we only had three penalties or two penalties, and then Fiji was the decider. And I missed my first kick at goal. But then went on to kick the rest. I think I kicked six in a row, or whatever it was, or five or six in a row. And then actually from that kick against, first kick against Fiji, I never missed in the World Cup right through until the first game in 2011. So the kind of run that went through the rest of the 2003 World Cup, the whole 2007 World Cup, right into the 2011 World Cup. So, but that kick itself, I can just remember it. It's crazy. It's crazy things go through your head all the time. And it, Tom Smith try this level, I think.
Yeah.
And I was totally under impression that I had to kick this. It was 2 minutes to go, one more, whatever it was, a couple of minutes to go. Seeing the heat, the game in the kind of 4 o'clock Sydney, and was tired. Obviously, fourth game of the four pool games, so there was fatigue there. And my driver, well, to find your process, you go through this, loads of stuff flashes through your mind about this. It wasn't, I hope I kick it, or what happens if I miss it. I was just like, listen, I'm really tired here. So for goodness sake, find your process and put this over. I can't, because at that time I thought we would go to extra time if I missed the kick.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we would have qualified on tries anyway. I didn't know that. Thought I had to kick it. And I suppose when you're a goal kicker, you know now, you have to find your process and get into your process and follow it. How you find that process can be loads of different ways. But for there, the driver in my mind is that I had to play extra time and to concentrate here. And lucky enough, I managed to get over.
Indeed, and that was also the game where you got a go fly half and a blow in the head.
Well, the blow in the head came the next game. And, I got a fly half. It was great. I mean, I played against, I think, the Barbarians prior to going on that tour in 2003. To South Africa at Standoff, and I trained quite a lot there, but hadn't really played a huge amount there. And for the deciding game, I was moved there. But the support I had in and outside him, it was brilliant. Brian Redpath was Cam Half, and Gregor Townsend in the centre with Andy Henderson. And how we wanted to play suited my game. We got through it, and it was something that, like, whenever I played, I know we've said this a thousand times, we used to talk when I was throughout my career, but I would happily play anywhere. And it sounds cliched, but of course you would. And I never really pigeonholed myself as a player in a certain position. I'd just get out and do what I was asked as best I could in whichever position it was. So a bit more structure that comes with playing standoff, obviously, but I was comfortable in that position. And I'd played a lot throughout my career there. And yeah, with Kenny Gregor and Basil either side of me, it was a lot easier than it could have been.
Because you started there. I mean, I remember you as an 18-year-old winning the cup final at Murrayfield for Gala, playing outside half there against, was it Kelso?
Kelso, yeah. Yeah, I mean, my whole career was a standoff, really, until, you know, my first ever game for Scotland was a fullback, and it was the first time I'd ever played fullback.
Yeah.
South Africa,
well, that was the famous one where John Rutherford said they were moving you there for experience, yeah. And then, you know, sort of, 12 years later, you were still getting experience.
Well, I remember that press conference. I sat in that room that we're in, and then when Rudd said that, and then he turned around and said to me, he says, "Yeah, but we know who you'll finish up playing, Chris." And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, what does he mean? I remember as well, Rudd was brilliant because on that tour and around that time, he was brilliant at making the link between 10 and 15 in terms of how you think, how you play the game as a 10 is going to inherently help you as a fullback. So he almost was, it was brilliant in helping sow the seed and almost thinking ahead of the game. So being in the position where the opposite 10 was going to kick it because you knew what you would do in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember we had loads of conversations and we did work together on just how an understanding of both positions could help. And it was great. It was invaluable and stuff that I think helped me throughout my career.
And finally, just how, as a player, how much extra pressure and how much extra excitement does the World Cup itself bring? Because it's this once every 4 years jamboree of rugby, the best players in the world, everybody at full strength, everybody's been training with one goal in mind for the last 4 or 5 months. You know, it must ramp up every part of the game, both the pressure and the excitement.
Oh, undoubtedly. And I don't think you don't realise that until you're in it. And I think once you're out of it again, you forget how intense and how amazing it is. Maybe it's just because I've not got a great memory, but, you know, when you're actually in the moment of a World Cup, it's phenomenal. The pressure's brilliant. The excitement's brilliant. There's games the whole time. You watch all the other games that are on. So every time you come back to the hotel after training or after dinner, there's a game on. And you've got a vested interest in maybe individuals that are playing or individuals you're going to be playing against or teams you're going to be playing against. So you just get swallowed up in this, as you say, a jamboree or rugby, and you almost, when it finishes and you leave, there's almost like a real void left because it's so all-encompassing. I think that's probably more detailed now or more scrutinised now than it was in the other ones. So the players who played in 2015 will probably forget how they felt during the week and the build-up to the Australia game or the week and the build-up to the South Africa game or Samoa or how they felt after Japan, whatever it is. But as soon as they get into the camp and get into the World Cup in Japan, they'll think, oh yeah, we've been here before, I remember this, I love this. So I do think it's so unique that you're only aware of it when you're in it. But it's a motivation that pushes you on. It's something that you're so lucky to be part of. And ultimately, you're representing your country and you're representing the people who helped you get there and who support you. So it's a big responsibility, but it's one that I wouldn't change for anything that I've had the opportunity to do 4 times.
You were at the launch yesterday. How well do you think that Scotland squad can do?
I think they can do well. I think, in all honesty, not avoiding the question, I've said this on a number of occasions, and I said it yesterday, I can see whoever wins the World Cup having suffered a defeat in the pool stages in some way, shape or form, because I think from number one in the world to number 9, 10 or 8, 9, 10 in the world, teams can beat each other. They really can. On one-off fixtures, they can beat each other. So ultimately, the teams who are near the top of the world rankings can do it more consistently, and the effort that it takes for a team ranked 9th or 10th in the world to beat first or second in the world is a considerable effort. So sometimes the ability to repeat that is more difficult. So I think anyone can beat anyone, genuinely. And I think this team can be successful. I think we've had good performances over the last 2 or 3 years. There's probably a better understanding now from good performances and bad performances as to what needs to be right in order to be a good performance. And I think we've got some exceptional attacking players that other nations will fear and other nations will worry about. And they've got a work ethic and a work rate to work for each other that when they go and get tough, you're going to dig in and fight. So getting everybody out there in one piece, start well, is massively important. And I think we can.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great, as always, to hear from you and lots of insight into what it's like to play at an actual World Cup, something that many of us, I think, are jealous. Great to talk to you. That was Chris Patterson, obviously, reflecting on his World Cup memories going back all the way to 1999 when he came in as an 18-year-old into the squad as a young rookie, right the way through to 2011 when he bowed out after his 4th World Cup, still a Scottish record. John Barkley should be equaling that record at this World Cup, but disgracefully he didn't make the squad last time round. This time he has made the squad, as we know, and will travel. That's it from me this week. Next week, I can warn you, it is going to be pretty much wall-to-wall Scotland players talking about their thoughts ahead of the World Cup. They travel out next week. I'll be travelling out a few days after them, bringing you plenty of material from Japan and from the Scotland camp. But in the meantime, as far as this week's concerned, I'm afraid not for the first time. The clock has beaten us, so I've got to call it good night. Good night.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.